You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
This week on the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast, we interview Mike Kennedy from Retro Magazine and the upcoming Retro VGS, which stands for Video Game System. It's got cartridges, and it's amazing. Did you know that you, yes you, dear listener, can sponsor an episode of the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast? Just go to littlepodcast.com, select Famicom Dojo from the drop-down, click the donate button, then call us at 608-492-1923 or email us at podcast@famicomdojo.tv and tell us how awesome you are. Yes, we were born to play all this video games.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. Hey, this is interesting. We have three people today. Did you know that, Sean?
I was aware of that going in, yes.
Okay, good. Good. And as you've seen from the title of this podcast, we are going to be talking a little about the Retro VGS. But first, Mike, why don't you introduce yourself and your connection to this thing?
Yeah, sure. Well, my name is Mike Kennedy. I'm publisher of Retro Video Game Magazine and also kind of co-creator of this new cartridge-based video game console that we're going to be kickstarting here in a month or so, hopefully, called the Retro VGS.
I like that name, by the way. It really brings back the Atari memories.
Yeah, it's debatable, right? People like the name. They don't like the name. They, you know, it is a pretty vague name, and I've been fighting myself. I actually woke up this morning. Woke up like, I don't know, 2 or 3 in the morning. I'm thinking to myself, God, do we, you know, should we rename this thing or because it's actually getting to be bigger than what it originally kind of, when we originally kind of pitched this to our, you know, to the fans and stuff, maybe what, 3 or 4 months ago on Facebook initially, this product has continued to evolve into just something completely, you know, much more awesome than what we had intended originally. So, you know, it's getting bigger than just this kind of retro thing out here in left field. So we're trying to figure out, you know, does it, you know, if we rename it, you know, what kind of kink is that going to throw into it? I don't think we're going to, because, it's all over the net, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's been picked up everywhere for the last few months. It's making tons of headlines. And if we change it, you know, of course, you know, hey, that's worked. You know, yeah. Nintendo has changed things at the last minute, you know, and I think they are kind of all of the console makers have done that in the past, where it's like everybody's calling it one thing and then, you know, it just comes out one day that it's called something else, you know, takes everybody by surprise. So I'm not really sure. I think we're going to call it that. I mean, it does go hand in hand with Retro Magazine.
Yeah.
So in that respect, I think when people learn that and knowing that the magazine now is starting to, reach a lot further than it did when we first launched it, you know, a year and a half ago? Long time ago. I can't believe it. Can you believe it's been that long?
It has been a long time.
It's crazy. And so they go hand in hand. So yeah. We're trying to kind of play them off and co-brand that retro, you know, that retro logo, which we really love. So that's why we called it the Retro VGS, to play right off the same branding of Retro Video Game Magazine. So
I got to say, when I first saw the announcement, I thought I was checking the calendar because I'm like, okay, it's a, you know, because you'd, I thought it was an April Fool's joke.
It was right around April, I think, when we announced it.
It was.
It wasn't April 1st, though.
Shortly
it was not April 1st.
That, you did that, like, they did that mock-up on the site about the relaunch of the Dreamcast or something.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, okay, now they're playing off the Jaguar. Jaguar's coming back. And then I'm reading more, and I'm like, oh, it's real.
Yeah, I could see where people would have thought that there was some shenanigans going on with that. Although it wasn't April 1st, I think it was maybe a few days before it or something, but certainly right around that time where it would give that impression that maybe it wasn't real. But you know, we just couldn't contain it any longer. that just happened to be when we wanted to push it out, and we were all excited about it, and we just thought, what the heck, let's throw it out there right now and start getting people's feedback and criticism and learn what people want, and that's what we've done all along. We've been very transparent about this thing. I mean, a large company doing a product launch like this would never do what we're doing. You know what I mean? So it's been really interesting. There's, you know, certain things that we say that, you know, maybe we shouldn't have said, and but you know what, it all goes back to just, again, just being as transparent as we can, because this is really a system for everybody. I mean, as much as we want to own it, as much as Steve wants to, you know, start making games for it again, and I want to, you know, play games again. I haven't turned on any of my systems for probably, I mean, well over a year and a half to 2 years. I haven't turned my PS3 on. I don't have any of them on, you know, the newer systems. I haven't turned my Wii on. I haven't messed with any of that stuff. You know, I've turned my Dreamcast on. I've turned my GameCube on. I've turned on all of my old systems down here, you know, pretty frequently. But any of the new systems, I just I don't know. Every time I turn them on, it's a hassle.
Yeah. Well, turn them on now, and they should be done with the updates by the time this thing comes out. So.
Maybe. It's no, true, though. Constant updates.
It really is getting that way. Just before we go any farther with the questions, just in case anybody is just jumping in here for the first time, what exactly is the Retro VGS in like just a couple minutes?
Well, the Retro VGS is going to be a cartridge-based console, the first cartridge-based console to play new games. And we're not talking handheld stuff. We're talking full-size console to play new games on cartridges since the N64. And the reason that we're doing this is just to, just bring back some of the culture of gaming. Of course, there's a new culture now. It's not a culture that a lot of us, who grew up on it with the kind of the earlier culture of gaming really like. Frankly, there's a lot of, you know, people that are in this generation that grew up in this generation that don't even like the culture of gaming right now. And so we're, at least for retro gamers, we're trying to bring back a simpler system, a system that you take out of the box, you plug it into the wall, you plug it into your TV, you plug a cartridge in, you turn it on, you give the controller to your friend sitting next to you, or your brother, or your sister, or your mom, and you sit down, the game just comes on and works right out of the box. And yeah, the game should work right out of the box too. So it's not going to be connected to the internet. It's not going to require any updates. Again, there's pluses and minuses with that. I mean, that is one of the nice things about modern day, you know, technology and game is, you know, you get a game that doesn't work. They put out a patch, they get it fixed eventually and you play it, but you know, you don't know how long you got to wait before that happens, unfortunately. You know, we're just trying to, again, just take gaming back more or less to the way that it was, you know, in the 80s and the 90s. And now that retro games are such a hot topic and a hot genre and a growing genre in the industry, I think it's time for a system like this to kind of come back, kind of bring gaming back kind of to its essence and kind of bring it back to where it started and kind of using modern day technology to do that. You know, we're not just creating another 16-bit system here. This thing is going to be, you know, pretty high tech. You know, it's as next generation as you're going to get for a cartridge-based system. And again, just bring back that culture and things like that. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, you buy your kids a console for Christmas. You know, you need to take it out of the box and update it and everything before Christmas morning, right? Because like we all did. You're sitting there for hours waiting for this thing to, you know, before you can finally play a game on it. And it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, my brother got a Nintendo Wii, and it's a Nintendo system. Wii U, Wii U for Christmas, and it had that you could download the Zelda game with it. It was the not quite a pack in because it was just a code, but I remember it took a few days for him to actually be able to get all the updates and everything because the servers were all jammed with new, with kids getting things on Christmas. Yeah. And I'm just like, if I was 10 years old, I would be so disappointed.
I mean, modern day gaming is great. They're doing some great, awesome things. The games are great. You know, they're, you know, stretching the boundaries like AAA and modern day. It's always should be doing that.
Yeah.
But for us, we don't have to do that. You know, we can take these now in a sense, we do have to do it because these retro games that people are making these days are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. They look like 8-bit or 16-bit games, but they're getting huge. you know, we're getting 200-400 megabyte games that look like they play on a Nintendo, but of course they wouldn't. So we need to make a system that will play those games with ease, you know, the Mighty Number Nines and, you know, the Thimbleweed Parks and some of these new games that are coming out that are just going to be, that are retro style, but that are big. And they're probably only going to be available via, you know, digital downloads or streaming. But we hope we can get those same games and bring them onto permanent cartridges and preserve some of these games, because some games deserve that preservation. And doing it on a cartridge-based system with cartridges that are going to last, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years or longer is a great way of doing it.
Well, that's what kind of got my attention finally, because I heard about this release, I don't remember how many months ago. I was like, oh, well, cartridges, okay, that sounds cool. I'm not sure that's going to work. And then I heard a little bit more, and then I finally read your FAQ, and I was like, the hardware underlying this, the storage medium is this new thing. It's not, you know, the original ROMs that they had used in the NES cartridges and the like. And that's what really got my attention finally. It was just that it's more cost effective and it'll last longer than
Flash,
for instance. Yeah. So yeah. I guess my two big questions then are, what is the storage capacity of this technology, and is any of it rewritable for game saves?
Oh, well, yeah, certainly rewrite. I mean, we want to, first of all, yeah, we're saving games on cartridges without a doubt. Was that part of the question?
Yeah, that was part of the question. You know, you're talking about like the big games. Like how big can these cartridges be?
Well, we're still kind of buttoning that up now. You know, mast ROMs are around in some respects, but at low volume, they're just way out of the price range that we can afford unless this thing really goes crazy.
Sure.
And there's, you know, there's not as many people that used to make those as there were back in the day. I mean, that's what kind of all of the old cartridges were built on. Maybe the 3DS is still using mast ROMs. You know, I don't know. But we've located one company, which is like the biggest provider of them. And I think they are still selling to Nintendo. And they've said that they're even going to be phasing them out. So, you know, it's a great technology. It's old school and you know, they last a hell of a long time. Right. Mm-hmm. And flash really doesn't. So there's a couple of different types. You know, there is some flash that's just not your standard everyday flash that, you know, if you Google 100-year flash, you know, we've been doing a lot of and trying to learn as much about some of this stuff as we can, but it does get expensive with the bigger games. You get over about, gosh, maybe 50, 60 megabyte games. The flat, that really high quality flash with that retention time really gets expensive. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at a second option, and this may, we may do this with all of them. At first we were going to have two levels, like up to X amount, you know, up to this size of game, we do this 100-year flash. And if it gets over this size of game, we'll go to this kind of hard drive system in the cartridge. And so, you know, it's like this mini disc technology, and these, I mean, there's really no limit. I mean, they're huge. I mean, they're just huge. And, they last, I mean, you know, they're saying, you know, at least 20 years. They're, you know, they're kind of saying even a little bit more than that, but it's really, you know, important to my team, Steve Wieda, and, you know, he goes back to Atari in the Sega days. And I mean, it's, you know, it's like, if he's going to be part of this system's got to last for 50 plus years. Mm-hmm. I mean, at a minimum, you know, he wants this thing to be like an Atari or an NES or a SNES. I mean, where you just play it and it, you know, you plug it in 30, 40, 50 years from the day you bought it, it still works. And it's hard, you know, what we're trying to do. First of all, it's not cheap. Building a system like this in the modern era is very difficult with the modern day televisions and, you know, the, you know, trying to build a system without a computer in it, without an operating system in it. It's tough, you know, it's been really tough. And, I've got two hardware guys, Steve Weed and John Carlson, who are both very capable. I mean, retro gamers at heart, grew up in the industry. I mean, started in the industry, never left the industry. They're hardware guys, they're software guys. They're crazy hardware gurus. I mean, these guys are incredible. And we're putting everything but the kitchen sink into this thing. I mean, so, you know, just to kind of, again, fill people in. So we're using the Atari Jaguar shells. The console shells and the cartridge shells. Why the heck would we be doing this? Well, put it very simply, without those two components, you know, of this venture, I wouldn't be doing this, because developing a console from scratch, designing it, you know, building the tooling for it that will, you know, eventually mass produce these. I mean, you just can't, you know, everybody's like, well, in this day and age, you can just get a 3D printer. Well, yeah, to build one or two of them, you know, but you're not going to build thousands of them with a 3D printer. You know, it just doesn't work that way. So, you know, you still do it the old school way. You got to get this, these big blocks of steel and they, you know, they go into these big injection mold machines in it. And so this literally saved us probably, I mean, $250,000 at least, wow, just for the tooling, not including any design work that would have had to been done on this. So, you know, this is probably in the end saving us somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000 right at the start. And without it, I mean, I wouldn't, I mean, I don't have that kind of money up front. If I was going to go get venture capital to do this up front, they'd laugh me out the office. You're going to make a cartridge based system. I mean, what are you talking about? Now, maybe after the Kickstarter, they'll think differently, but at least before it, they're kind of like us. I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen. So, you know, we'll just have to see if the demand is there. But anyway, so that's, so I bought the original tooling for the Atari Jaguar. And again, that's what's making this all possible. Of course, the insides are going to be completely redone. The controller is going to be different and everything else. But it will have the outside appearance, at least the shape of the Jaguar because of that.
Now, I mean, I had heard, I mean, this is kind of legend that the Jaguar tooling was used for a while in a dental, like a dental medical equipment for what, a lamp or something? Or
a camera, a dental camera.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'd heard about that, and I remember for a long time it was like unconfirmed. Was it real? You know, it's kind of gaming folklore almost. Mm-hmm. And then you announced that you bought it.
Yeah, it was totally true. Yeah. I mean, Imagine Systems was the dental company that bought the tooling from Atari in 98 when Atari was going through some sort of a liquidation. You know, it was really interesting because we just went up there in December and looked at the tooling for the first time, you know, 7-8 months ago. So really, this whole process has been pretty fast if you think about it. But it seems like it's taking forever to people that just want this thing to start, like the Kickstarter to start now, and we do too. But in the scheme of a product development cycle, this is probably the fastest product that's ever going to be brought to market ever. So I went up there in December and we looked at the tooling and found out he had the injection mold company, and so Imagine Systems was in the Bay Area, right where Atari was, right there in Silicon Valley, okay? And so the injection mold company that made the products for Imagine Systems was the same injection mold company that was making the Atari shells. And so the injection mold company got wind that Atari was going under or going to get rid of this product line or end this product line or whatever. And so then they told Steve at Imagine Systems that, hey, you know, we're also, you know, working with this product from Atari. They're going to be liquidating this tooling. And we thought you might be interested in this because the size and the shape of this product is very similar to what we're already making for you, which was true. When I went into Steve's office, he had like his original product, which was like a plastic clamshell that had, you know, some internal stuff and a wand camera that came out of it. And it had a handle on it, so the dentist would carry it from office to office and hang it on the wall. And then, you know, the camera would go into the person's mouth. And they invented that system where your mouth is up on the video, you know, up on the computer screen. Oh. That was them. So they were using that. And then eventually technology moved on for them, and then they phased out that product line. And that's why they didn't need it anymore. And I'll talk about that here in a second. But it was really weird. The product they designed looked just like almost exactly like the Jaguar, but bigger. So when this smaller, more compact unit came in, you know, Steve's like, well, yeah, we're going to do it. So he ended up buying it from Atari and, you know, repurposing it as their product for a few years. And then it was probably 3 or 4, hell, maybe it's been 5 years ago now, they were done with it and they stuck it up on eBay. And that's where I saw it. because I was in Atari age and there was a thread in there under their Jaguar forums about this Jaguar tooling that was up on eBay for $5,000 or $6,000. And all of the guys in Atari age were trying to figure out, you know, we got to save this tooling. We can't let it get melted down because that's, you know, basically what you have to do is you recycle it and you melt the steel down and you kind of get some money back that way. And so they were trying to pool their money together to save this tooling and everything. But it's 9,000 pounds of steel. I mean, where are you going to put it unless you're going to do something with it, right? I mean, we videotaped the whole, you know, we went up there. And if you go to our Facebook page, I think right at the top somewhere you'll see a video section or photo section. You'll see that video where we kind of document the trip up there. And we meet Steve for the first time. He takes us back and he kind of uncovers this tooling. You know, it's kind of like Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know. And we look at it and then we document it. I end up buying the tooling for next to nothing. And then I shipped it from San Francisco down here to Southern California to an injection mold shop that we're going to use. And then I sold quite a few thousands of dollars of tooling of translucent clear Jaguar cases to Jaguar collectors.
Yeah, I almost bought one of those.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I've got some extra shells. Yeah, I'll send you one.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I've got if you guys both want one, yeah, I'll send you guys. Yeah. Send me an email, though. Don't let me forget.
Yeah.
I was just joking about anyway, the orange one, but here we go.
Well, you can get a clear one, you know. Well, they were, you know, modding their existing Atari Jaguars, you know, taking them apart, pulling the boards out, putting them in, putting in LED lights. And if you go to Atari Age and look for the translucent Jaguar thread, it's right on the first page. You'll see some pictures of what they've, of some of the mods that people have done with them. It's really neat. So essentially all that, what I sold to the guys over Atari Age paid, it's already paid for the tooling. It paid for me to ship them down here. It's paid for everything.
Very
I mean, they're
nice.
They're completely free and clear, and we haven't even used them yet for this. But the reason I did that is, number one, is we had to set the tooling up to run some test molds through them, right, to see if they still work. You know, who the hell knows if they were even going to kick out a quality product after, 20, 25 years. Lo and behold, we put them in there, and my God, I mean, even with the clear translucent, which would, like, show any blemish you could imagine, they just came out looking perfect. So there's still a lot of life in them. And actually we ended up getting a whole second mold, that Atari had as a backup mold that they never used.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For the case. I mean, we're talking probably many hundreds of thousands of, you know, potential that they can, you know, before they start wearing out, you know? So, anyway, no, it was a great purchase. And again, that's the reason why it looks the way that it does. And it's pretty cool, I think. I'm a lover of Atari. I grew up with Atari. And I personally did like the Jaguar. I didn't love it, but, you know, there were some good games on it. I enjoyed it. I did buy one when it came out in the 90s and I really loved it. So so I think it's really neat to kind of have that. And when I bought all of that tooling, I got all of the original paperwork from Atari signing away all rights, titles, and interest in the design and the whole thing. And I got D-size prints, original Atari D-size prints of the whole Jaguar, like 20 different prints of the outside, the inside, every specification and dimension and everything. It was really neat, you know, for the archives. So it was just a really great thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's great. And I think a lot of the target audience, you know, are going to put this thing right next to their existing Jaguar on their shelf. Probably. You know,
yeah, I would.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a really interesting story about all the hardware there. But I think what people are most excited about are the games. So why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, this is, an obvious challenge for us. You know, you don't have to be a super smart person to understand that, you know, getting games onto this thing, you know, may be difficult. But what we have found since we've announced this thing and as we've been approached by developers, I mean, every week there's probably 10 to 20 developers reach out to us of all different, you know, sizes.
Oh.
I mean, we've probably had close to 200 by now. And, you know, a lot of these companies just, or individuals, just aren't making money anywhere else right now. One of the biggest things you'll see in some of the threads that in some of the news stories that people post, you know, people are saying, why, you know, this idea is crazy. First of all, why would anybody develop a game for this when they could get their games onto, you know, Steam or onto PlayStation Network? Well, not everybody can do that, you know, or there'd be thousands of games on those systems, just like they are on mobile. You know, thank God they're a little bit more selective. You know, mobile right now is just, it's crazy, right? I mean, you can have the best game in the world unless you're a big company and it can afford to, you know, float it to the top. You're lost. There's no way your game's going to get seen unless, you know, there's the few that get viral for whatever reason.
Yeah.
We, you know, you never know how that happens, but it happens. But, you know, a large percentage, the biggest percentage of games and developers that launch into the mobile world, you never hear the games. And the ones that you do hear of, you play for a while, and then you just forget about them. I mean, and again, I think that's terrible. If you think back over the last maybe 5, 6, 7 years, I don't know how long the iPhone's been out, but I mean, it's starting to get old now, right? I mean, yeah. There's been games for years on this. There's so many great retro style games that came out over the years that you've just completely forgotten about. You loved them back in the day. Loved them, you know, but just think back over the last 7 years. When the iPhone first came out, what were some of the first games that you got?
Oh, yeah.
You know, do you still play them or would you play them if they were still on a cartridge on your shelf? You know, probably. And so some of these games are just getting lost to time. And you know, so we're really trying to kind of – one of the segments of games that we're looking at is going back and looking at some of the real successful retro titles that have come out over the years that have only up to this point been available digitally and figuring out if we can bring them onto a cartridge. If there's still an audience that would love to get them back and oh, I totally forgot about it. I love that game. I'd love to have it on cartridge and, you know, play it forever, you know. And so that's kind of one segment of games that we're looking at. And those are relatively easy because they're already out there. They've been, you know, tested and debugged already years ago. And it's just a matter of, you know, porting them over. And, you know, of course, it's our job then to make our system very easy to kind of bring those types of games on. And so, again, that's one segment. And then you've got this other segment of kind of all of these new retro games that are being announced all the time. I mean, Kickstarter's lighting up with them all the time.
Yeah.
And even outside of Kickstarter, you hear of homebrew titles that are coming out and all these really cool titles. And, you know, trying to get them all kind of centralized and brought out in one place, you know, kind of picking the best of the best and bringing them out on cartridges. And so that's kind of what we've been looking at kind of initially is, you know, some of these games that aren't yet done that look like they're going to be great and trying to, you know, get on their radar right off the bat. So, you know, that those games come out on ours. So we've had a few game announcements so far. And then there's the obvious ones. I mean, you know, going out to Watermelon, try to get Pure Solar onto this thing. They've got a new fighter coming out that we'd love to get onto this thing. And so we've talked to those guys. You know, they're interested. You know, I've talked to Ron Gilbert about Thimbleweed Park. I think that's going to happen.
Really? That would be great.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be wonderful.
Oh, I know. We're talking to Way Forward. You know, I'm trying to get Shantae Risky's Revenge onto this thing and some of their games. And they're, you know, very excited about this, about the potential of this. We're talking to NG Dev Team. These are some of the big ones that we're having really great conversations with.
Oh, man, I would love Last Hope on this thing.
Well, we're bringing out, hopefully, we're going to confirm Gunlord this week, I'm hoping. yeah, and then they've got Krautbuster coming out, which is kind of like Metal Slug. And that's one we go after. But, you know, they got a ton of shooters they've brought out on the Dreamcast where they've maybe just sold a few hundreds of, you know, maybe a few hundred of them. and, you know, like games like Gunlord, I mean, they're selling for $400 or $500, you know, on AES. So, hey, if we can make that available. Yeah. I mean, if we can bring that and bring it to a larger audience in the form of a $50 cartridge. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So, I mean, right off the bat, somebody could be saving $400 or $500, you know, getting the same experience playing that on this versus, you know, having to have an AES system and get one of the big, you know, having to turn a cartridge in, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's, and yeah, I mean, going to the bigger publishers and developers, we've had conversations with Konami, I've been there, but you know what? I mean, the big companies, they operate in guarantees. That's how they've always operated. They want to know, they need to know, okay, what's the minimum guarantee, you know, blah, blah, blah. And right now, we don't know. We don't know how many we're going to sell. Are we going to sell 5,000? Are we going to sell 10,000? Are we not even going to sell 5,000? Are we going to sell 50,000? I mean, who the heck knows? So really, you know, what I've said in other podcasts is that, you know, I think this is kind of our last chance and maybe it's not, maybe some other crazy person will try to do what we're doing. Who knows? But I mean, this is sort of it in my mind. And, you know, I'm certainly not probably going to try again. I mean, this is sort of the last hurrah here, I think, for a cartridge based system. I think the timing's right. I think there's plenty of great games that deserve to be on cartridge at this time. I think it's an art form now. Retro gaming is an art form. So that's going to continue. So let's, you know, the best way to play retro games is on a retro style system.
Yeah.
Not with, you know, wireless, you know, controllers that aren't real responsive, you know, and so again, trying to give people the best experience to play these retro games that are coming out and give them the ability to collect again and to play these games on original hardware years down the road, just like we're all fortunate enough to be able to do and collect for, right? You know, even with the kids today, they get some cartridges, they get out of gaming, you know, 10, 15 years from now, they get out of school, the job, they want to buy this stuff again. There's something for them to buy that's not a brick, you know, and that's what's really important to us. I mean, that's why people are like, why don't you make it online or whatever? Because, you know, in 30 years, when you plug this thing in, what's going to happen? Is there going to be a server there that's going to ping still? No, definitely not. So, you know, you got to think.
I love that on the fact there. The for whatever crap reason that they decided to ping out to a server. I loved that.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, I mean, you know, we don't want it to ping a server that's died 20 years ago. And then you just have a brick there that just doesn't do nothing for you, you know? And yeah, everybody's sort of used to that right now. And, but you know, anything with a motor on it, just, it's probably not going to be around then, mm-hmm. you know? You know, sure, emulation's probably going to be around in some form forever, you know, the foreseeable future, right? But I don't know. I think emulation's great, yeah. But honestly, it's nothing compares to playing on the original system. Never will. Never will.
I completely agree. I don't know. I think I might be the target audience for this product. And I'm wondering if it might have been inspired by our previous podcast with me complaining about everything going digital.
Yeah, it sure was nice of you to like make a system just for the two of us. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. We appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it expands a little bit above and beyond that. I hope.
But, I mean, yeah, I mean, every time I read a thread about this on a gaming website, there's of course the people yeah. who are like, finally, you know, this is wonderful. And then there's the horde of people who I think just don't get it. Yeah. And perhaps those people never will.
Yeah.
Well, here's why I'm excited. Know. Like, if I understand the hardware description language thing correctly, that's on the cartridge, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean that's like the real strength, I think, of the system is that, you know, you're not locked into one hardware specification forever and ever. Like every game that comes out, you can have whatever one you need, and then you're good to go like indefinitely, and you just use the same base console. Sure, but you're like you know, making a virtual console, which is awesome.
More or less. This thing, the most interesting thing about this console is the FPGA component, which, just to put it in layman terms, is a chip that allows our console to reconfigure itself based on what cartridge is put in it. So the reason we're doing the FPGA, and again, this is adding cost to this thing, but it's really the component that a lot of people just said, oh, it's going to be another Android system, or it's going to be this, or it's going to be that. And then they found out it's going to have the FPGA in it. And again, there's a lot of people that don't know what the hell that even is. But the ones that do are like, oh my God, okay, now you have our attention. This is really cool. And so the reason we're doing it is that there's lots of people that are making games, you know, still making games on the homebrew level and maybe low-level indie level for the Genesis, for the SNES, for the NES, for the Atari, for the Intellivision, for the ColecoVision, for the Amiga, for the Commodore, for the Apple II, I mean, whatever. And so so there's a collector, kind of a hobbyist community out there that has written cores that we're going to license from them. We're not going to steal them and just use them without paying
anybody. What?
Right. So we're talking to Kevin Horton, Kevtris. He's probably one of the premier experts of FPGA technology for gaming in the country. And he's been great to work with. And he's done a lot of the 8-bit cores, 8-bit console cores.
Oh.
And then, of course, you've got the MIST team, who's done a lot of cores for the 8-bit PC stuff. And so we can license these cores. I mean, why reinvent the wheel? You know, if these cores are solid cores, and they are for the most part, now, hey, maybe we can fund some improvement on some of them if they aren't perfect. But what these cores do is basically turn our system into whatever system it needs to be. And it does it through, we don't really like the word hard emulation, but I mean, it really is. It's like hardware emulation. It's not software emulation. Okay. And the reason we're doing it is not to play old games, which I'm sure hackers are going to, you know, eat this up when we get it out there. There's gonna be so many cool things you're gonna probably be able to do with it, which is great. But again, the reason we're doing it is to give these developers who make games for all of these old systems the ability to continue to make those games the exact same way that they're doing it, not having to change anything, learn new tool chains or whatever. They can continue to make them for whatever console they want. We supply the core. They don't have to know anything about that. They just give us the, you know, the game code. We combine it with the core and the cartridge. And when that cartridge goes into our slot and the system turns on, it talks to the FPGA, the chip in our thing, and it reconfigures our console to be exactly an Amiga or a Sega Genesis or a Super Nintendo or an NES or a Sega Master System or an Atari or an Intellivision or whatever. And then it just operates just like that. And so, again, it reconfigures, which is, again, this has never been done before in a consumer product. FPGA technology has never been used in a consumer product, which is bad because it's not cheap. It's not like a commodity item. This is still something that's expensive. It's just finally kind of getting into a price range where you can stick it into something like this. I mean, there's FPGA boards out there that are, you know, a few hundred dollars on the hobbyist level. And, you know, what we're trying to do is take that, but put it in, you know, a nice shell and into a consumer product. So it's not just a bare board that, you know, people are getting. So, but it's been a challenge. And then on the other side, we do have an ARM processor in there. And in some ways, the ARM will work with the FPGA. And so developers will be able to kind of learn from our system. And we'll certainly have some documents on this because we're, it's going to be some amazing, developers can be able to do some amazing things with this. They really are. I mean, the games can be enormous. They can either run off the FPGA side or if, you know, and we may have our own native core that's our system core. Everybody's like, well, every system has to have an identity. This doesn't really have an identity because it's just sort of everything, which, hey, why not have everything?
That's the, I think that's the strength to me, honestly. Like, the fact that you can do that. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you could literally have a game that starts off in the 8-bit gameplay era and evolve into a 16-bit era and evolve into a 32-bit
wait,
area.
Wait. FPGA. FPGA can evolve kind of, I mean, can reconfigure kind of on the fly?
People will be able to figure that out, yeah. Yeah, I think that'd be a really awesome play mechanic. And somebody even mentioned that on Facebook or something, where like somebody makes a platformer that goes through time and it starts off like, you know, really blocky Atari and then it gets into like NES style and then it looks like, you know, Super NES style and then it looks like Neo Geo style and then it looks like PS1 style, you know, or something like that. So the game kind of evolved. People are going to be able to do some things that, I mean, we don't even know what they're going to do at this point. But it's going to, the bottom line is this thing is going to be a very capable machine and it will be capable of playing many of the same games that people are playing on the current generation systems, the modern day systems. But instead of having to, you know, what's bad is like the cool retro titles were all relegated to digital downloads. I mean, we're never going to get a disc for them. Now there are some exceptions. Right. Treasure, Shovel Knight's coming to disc. Thank God.
Yeah.
You know, which is awesome. Retro City Rampage did come out on disc. You know, I think he's even working on a 386 version of it now that's going to come out. I don't know, on a floppy or a 3.5. I don't, you know, Brian's crazy. So you know, we're actually hoping that we'll be announcing, or maybe at this point we will have announced that we will have Retro City Rampage on this thing. We're kind of finalizing that deal. Yeah. On a cartridge, for God's sake, with an instruction book and a box. And we're going to do really cool things on the Kickstarter. So, I mean, the Kickstarter is all about exclusives. Every cartridge that's bought or that's sold through the Kickstarter is going to be a limited edition cartridge only available for that 45-day campaign period. After that, the retail version will go to its standard, you know, black or whatever. We may do a translucent, you know, for piracy reasons so people can see into the game and stuff like that. We're kind of discussing how we might want to try to do this. And but anyway, these are only going to be available. And so the packing game will be a gold cartridge. It'll never be gold again. you know, if we bring out Shantae, it could be on a translucent purple cartridge, for example, that you're never going to get again. It's just, we're going to just have so much fun with this. And again,
my
wallet. Yeah. Well, again, it's like I said, it's not going to be a cheap system.
Yeah.
You know, we're really trying to figure out what we can do because, you know, I don't want to get into the whole pricing thing yet, but I mean, I'll say this, you know, originally we were saying 150 to 180. This was months ago. This was before the FPGA. This was when, you know, in my mind, it was just going to be, you know, basically a 16-bit system, like, you know, a Sega Genesis or a you know, with basically only that type of capability in it.
Yeah.
And, we've really, as we've gone, we've added things that are really going to make it neat and fun for developers, which ultimately will make it fun for the owners of this thing for years and years and years down the road. I mean, we're making a system literally that's, again, that everything going in it is in it because it's going to last, you know, stand the test of time. And it could potentially last a people's lifetime, just like an Atari, you know. Hopefully it's got a little more life in it. Hopefully I have a little more life in me, you know. So again, we're building a kind of a system that'll be around for a heck of a long time, unlike a lot of the systems here. And the other thing is, you know, we're not getting the volume discounts on parts, you know, and we don't know what to predict, right? So, I mean, our minimum goal is probably going to be around 5,000 units. Well, we really aren't getting hardly any price breaks for that quantity.
Yeah.
Now, you know, as we get into the maybe 10 to 20 to 30 to 40 to 50,000, we're going to probably have some sort of a credit back to the buyers, to the backers. And again, this is, you know, it'll all be revealed when, and there's still a lot more thought to go into this, but you know, the bottom line is if the quantities increase throughout the campaign period, and we know based on these benchmarks that we can get better pricing, which we'll know up front, our stretch goals will almost kind of be based on units sold. Not as much on dollars, but on units, which I don't know if that's ever been done before. So, you know, it'll sort of correlate itself, but I mean, essentially, you know, if we're building 5,000, we're building 20,000. If there's a savings at 20,000, we'll give that back to the backers at the end of the campaign in the form of a credit that they can use towards, you know, one of the games that they can buy and bundle in with their unit they're getting on the, you know, on the campaign page. We'll probably have 10 or 12, hopefully more than that, somewhere between 10 and 20 titles. That people will be able to, you know, include in some form or fashion with their bundle. And so I think if we get to 20,000, and again, there's still some coming out, but just for example, I think it kicks back a $20 discount or $20 credit. So, if you want to buy Gunlord, that may be designated as a $50 game. You can use your $20 credit and get Gunlord for $30 and add it to your, you know, to your bundle. So it will ship, you know, to you when the console ships next year. So something like that. So again, people will benefit by us hitting higher quantities. We'll pass that savings along to them, but you know, unless we can see into the future, we don't know. We can't do it up front. So that we're trying to get real creative with how we do this, you know, because we're trying to get this cost down. But unfortunately, it's just with what we're putting into this thing, you know, I think we're going to have a really good, you know, we're going to have to do a hell of a sales job.
Yeah.
Because it is going to be probably more than people are planning. So anyway, it's bad news and it's good news. The good news is it's going to be an incredible system. And I hope that people, you know, understand that and realize that and you know, will pay for the quality. You know, if we took some of this stuff out of it, it would just be a piece of crap. You know, we don't, you know, we're making it in the USA. You know, it's going to be made under our roof. PCB will probably, you know, that may be made in China or contract manufacturer here in the States. We're actually talking to one here in Orange County, contract manufacturer for the PC boards. I'd like to keep it all right here local so we can control it and see, you know, if there's issues, we're right here, you know. And so anyway, it's going to be a really killer product, and the capability is going to be unbelievable for developers and to bring some really cool games to this. And, you know, we need exclusives. We know that. But again, giving guarantees to companies like Konami, Capcom, Sega, Namco or whatnot is really tough right now. You know, we have talked with them and they are interested. They want to see where it goes. They don't want to get involved with the Kickstarter. They don't want to be, you know, they don't want to announce a game during the Kickstarter. We're still trying for this, but I don't think it's probably going to happen. So we're really going after some of the bigger, you know, indie titles that are coming on or getting kickstarted right now and try to get them onto it. You know, or some really, really great, you know, retro titles that have kind of come and gone that people would love to own permanently on a cartridge. And we're talking to Dotemu, just I'll throw that one out, everything they do is retro, right? We love them, and I'm talking to Cyril over there. They're in France, and I'm hoping again this week to nail down Raiden Legacy, four-game Raiden cartridge. Yeah, I think that would be awesome. So, plus they've got tons of titles that would be great to come back, and even some new ones they're working on, you know, for future that would be great on cartridge. But as far as indie developers, they love it. You know, they never thought they'd ever have their game on a cartridge. So this is just like, you know, any way, shape, or form, they'd love to help out. They'd love to put their game on a cartridge. We've not had one developer look at us like, "What the hell are you talking about?" I mean, we're manufacturing the cartridges. You know, we're taking care of all of that. It's not like the old days where the developer has to place an order for, you know, 10,000 cartridges and then sell them. We're really, you know, the publisher in this regard. We're going to be marketing their games. We're going to be, you know, if they're official games and kind of endorsed, they will be sold on our website. The reason I bring it up like that is, you know, we would like to open this up somewhat to other homebrew guys who maybe they make a game and they want to buy 50 of them and sell to their friends or take to an expo and sell them or put them on eBay or on their own website. But maybe they're not completely up to snuff that, you know, that we would sell them and take them to the mass market. And these would probably be printed on a different cartridge shell with some, you know, very obvious difference. So we would have a developer team that would work with them, developer support that would look at their game and say, okay, yeah, we'd love to put this game and have like a minimum order. You got to buy 20 or 25 of them minimum. And, yeah, you know, we'll do the box. We'll do the instruction manual for you. And of course, everybody that they sell one to has got to buy one of our systems. So it does help us. It marries people to our system. And it does give, again, those homebrew and those kind of new developers and those fledgling developers, you know, an opportunity to bring games out. Schools and education, I mean, that's a whole other thing, too. I mean, this thing is really a time machine. I mean, you can make a game in any style from it'll work with the early languages, you know, assembly and, you know, right up through, we're hoping, you know, the Unities and some of the modern day game engines that are out there as well. So it's just going to be a really great tool to have, I think, in the classroom and maybe bring some of these great games that are coming out of the education system, which they're making some great games these days. I mean, you go to E3, they always got a huge thing showing these games that are coming out from these students, and it's pretty amazing.
So basically, if you have the a retro VGS and you have a computer and a USB cable, you have exactly. A dev kit.
You do. Yeah, we'll have some That's software awesome. You probably download. Essentially, everyone's going to be a dev kit right out of the box.
All right, I'm going to have to port my old Apple II games that I made when I was a high school student.
Yeah, I mean, hey, why not? How cool would that be to have your own cartridge, right?
I know. I'm thinking that right now. Cool, a little bit crazy, a little stupid, but but really cool. Do you want to talk about any specific launch titles?
Well, we've got. Let me go to our website here because I'm starting to lose track here.
Good sign.
Yeah. Well, there's not that many on there yet. Let's see here. Hold on.
I think I read somewhere that Tiny Knight was going to be a pack-in. Is that still?
Tiny Knight's going to be a pack-in. That's still the case. Yeah, okay. One of the pack-ins for sure. And like I said, Kickstarter backers will be able to add other games to that, but that one's coming with every, you know, that will come automatically with every system. It's going to be a great game. I've played I've played some demo of it, and it's so much fun. If you love, like, Wonder Boy, you know, that kind of platforming RPG kind of stuff, it's really going to be neat. But there's so many cool play mechanics, like they pull from Joust, where you're flapping, you know, your horse's wings, and you know, it becomes kind of a shooter, and you can get to higher levels by flying, and it's just gonna be really cool. So we've got from Collector Vision, and Collector Vision's great. I mean, they're bringing out some great games. They do a lot of ColecoVision games, some Intellivision games. They're all super high quality games. They've been doing a lot of arcade ports. They've been bringing back on the ColecoVision, and you know, this is an opportunity for us to maybe bring some compilation cartridges out. But anyway, so they're doing Adventures of Tiny Knight and Sydney Hunter in the Caverns of Death. Tiny Knight will be exclusive to our system. Sydney Hunter was a Kickstarter they did for us. They're bringing that out on the SNES, but it's just a great platform, great looking platformer. We've got Read Only Memories and Songbringer, which are going to be two really, really super high quality indie games that are coming out that people can check out. If you go to our website, retrovgs.com, we have a games tab on there at the bottom of the page, and click on that and click on the cartridges, and it'll kind of take you to the official website of those cartridges, where I think they've all got movies and video of the games playing and stuff, so you can check them all out. Like I told you, Pure Solar, we're talking to them. That's been confirmed. Yeah. And kind of the funny one everybody's laughing at is Ark, is the Super 3D Noah's Ark from Pico. But you know what? It's going to be an inexpensive cartridge. You know, I think it's just going to be kind of fun. So, again, if we can bring out some cartridges like that, there's a market for that stuff. You know, not everybody's going to buy it. But, hey, why not? I mean, it's kind of it's a cool little game, kind of kind of a hack of
Castle Wolfenstein.
So I don't know. It's going to be kind of neat.
Really, really expensive game to get if you actually want the real cartridge
for the SNES.
Yeah.
So, you know, so those are the six that we've currently got on there. But like I said, we're really hoping that we can nail down Gunlord this week. We're hoping that we can nail down Retro City Rampage this week. I really want to make those announcements on the Facebook page this week.
Yeah.
So depending on when this airs, you know, it may already be announced or it may not. Who knows? The Raiden trilogy or Raiden Legacy 4-pack, we'd like to get that announced. Trying to think of who else we're talking to. Yeah, Thimbleweed Park, I'd love to get on this thing. Mighty No. 9 would be great, and Bloodstained, the new, you know, kind of Castlevania game would be really neat to come out on this thing if we can swing it. But again, those are going to be pretty big games.
Yeah.
I mean, not size isn't a problem for us. It's just, you know, they're kind of on a level above your average indie, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're more like a big developer publisher kind of situation. So, but again, I think if we can do it and the port is easy, why would they say no? You know, it's not like, again, developers have to order thousands of cartridges. We're going to be kind of burning these or flashing these as they're ordered, shipping them out more or less, you know, as they're ordered. Funstock in the UK is already expressed interest. They want to start taking pre-orders for this thing the day the Kickstarter ends. And we will figure out how to stock some stuff, at least over in Europe, to kind of alleviate some of the, you know, duties and taxes or whatever, you know, they get and shipping expenses and stuff like that. I'm not sure what we're doing in Japan yet, but if there's anything you, Kevin, can do over there to help us out. Yeah, maybe we can get some units over there or something. But this thing is going to be international, so it's not going to matter, you know, where you live. And,
region free.
Oh yeah, and I mean, it's we're trying to make a system that's kind of a love letter to every cartridge based system that came before it. So, I think I think the time is right, and I just hope that gamers and consumers feel the same way.
All right. One really interesting thing that I was reading is like when you reconfigure basically the cores, the FPGA, the configurations you put on it can be a little bit kind of custom, right? Like you could have the limitations of like the Famicom color palette, but with Super Famicom sound, for example.
Yeah. Developers can make their own cores or combine, you know, they can, I mean, developers, are, like I said, everybody's like, you know, it's going to be difficult, you know, to make a new core, make their own cores for this stuff. But I mean, developers, they love challenges, right? I mean, they thrive off of this kind of stuff. So again, if we can give them a system that's easily configurable and they can make their own cores, for example, NG Dev Team, you know, they could, I don't think there's a Neo Geo core that's been done yet. And but they basically said they'd make their own native core for our system, you know, because, I mean, they, you know, if they see a future there, they'll make a core for it and then they can use it every time, you know, once they've developed it. And, you know, some people will have the ability and the infrastructure to do that and some won't. But, you know, all we can do is kind of hope that at least for some of these 16-bit systems that, you know, we'll probably, you know, get Kevin working on a Genesis and a SNES one. He's been wanting to get started on that. This is a reason for him to do that now. So we may help finance some of the development of some of those 16-bit cores after we know that this thing's funded and it's a go. But yeah, developers can get really crazy with this. They're going to get nuts.
Well, like Shovel Knight, I know they went through the whole development process for the sound of actually programming it in for the sound chips for the Famicom, because it had a better sound range than the NES did.
Yeah.
And then turned it into MP3. Is like, and with this, they could just use that code they wrote for the direct sound and just do that instead if they wanted to and save themselves a lot of space, for instance.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm sure there's a little bit more to it than that, but I mean,
yeah. Sure.
Certainly, you know, a company like Yacht Club would be able to figure this thing out. I mean, it's not rocket science, you know. This is, I mean, you've got hobbyists that are out there doing this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, no, I think developers will get real creative with this stuff. But yeah, I mean, you don't have to be confined by the exact specs of a system. Again, some developers love that confinement, right? How can I stretch this to its limits but still stay within that envelope? That's always been something that programmers have loved to do and kind of stretch that. But, I mean, hey, if they want to go outside that envelope a little bit, they can be able to do it.
Another thing I'm kind of excited for is the prospect of there being fewer hardware shortages. Like, I love BattleKid, for instance, but I've never been able to buy a copy myself because, you know, they're always out of stock because it's just expensive as hell to print those cartridges. And I would love to be able to get a copy on, you know, the Retro VGS, for instance, because it's just basically it's NES code. Just stick it on one of your cartridges and you're good to go. And that's, I'm sure, a lot cheaper than trying to procure all those chips, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a game we'd love to bring on here. And I think he's working on another one. But we're talking with a lot of the NES guys, a lot of the NES homebrewers, about bringing some games onto this thing. And, there's a few new ones that are getting kickstarted right now. You know, we got, Jeffrey Winningham, doing, a Black Box Challenge, which is going to kind of be a platforming, RPG where you're trying to find all the NES Black Box games. It's going to be really neat. And, I think he's working on that with maybe the guy who did, I don't know. He's working on that. He's not developing. I don't think he's developing him. So he's working with one of the guys that did. I should know this, but I don't. But anyway, yeah. I mean, we've talked to so many people in the last like 2 months. It's just been insane. So I've got a whole folder and email just flooded with, you know, because I can't even keep track anymore. It's just getting crazy. So, but yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I haven't bought Pure Solar yet. You know, I have a Genesis. I could have bought the Genesis version. You know, I've got a Dreamcast. I think they're finally shipping the Dreamcast version out now. You know, we're going to get one of the HD versions for this thing. We may do the Dreamcast version. It's sort of a nice, it's kind of an in-between, you know, but we could go with kind of the bigger version that they're putting on the consoles now, too. So I'm not sure which one, you know, it's going to, you know, work best to port over, but why I would love both? To get on. Right. You know, I mean, yeah, give the people the option to play like, you know, all two or three different versions of it or something. But yeah, I mean, I'm waiting to play that game on this system. You know, I haven't bought Retro City Rampage yet. You know, I'd love to buy that game on a cartridge. Now, I did buy Shovel Knight on the 3DS. Love it. But I would love to have it on a cartridge.
Yeah.
Even though they're porting it to a cartridge for the 3DS. I still want a cartridge for this. So, you know, Yacht Club's definitely on the hit list and we've had emails back and forth. They're waiting to hear a little bit more about the nailing down some hardware stuff before, you know, they tell me 100%. But I think, you know, I think if this Kickstarter does well, I mean, I don't know if it'll approach OUYA numbers or not. I can tell everybody that if it does, I think we will do a really good job of bringing the games and showing that there's a market here. To developers. I mean, we've got the interest of homebrew and indie developers right now. But if we want to take this thing to the next level and start talking, you know, going after sequels to some of these beloved games and franchises from the 16-bit era, which I think we can do if we show there's a market for this, that people want these games and they don't want them on a touchscreen. Mm. You know, they want
Loom 2.
Yeah, this is the perfect. Hey, we got the USBs, you know, you can plug in a keyboard if you want or a mouse if you want. We're going to have DB9s on there so you can plug in your old Sega controllers, your old Atari controllers or the third party, you know, 9-pin controllers. So we're going to have 4 ports on the front of this thing. It's going to be really awesome. So developers are going to be able to really exploit that and get real, you know, again, if you want to plug a keyboard into this thing, you're going to be able to do it. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be great. And we just need the people to get behind it. We need gamers to get behind it and say, we love this. You know, we can still have our AAA system over here to play Call of Duty and all these games or whatever, these big, huge games, but let's set this thing right next to it. And, you know, we want to just pop a cartridge in and play with our buddies sitting next to us, eating a pizza. It's just easy and fun. And, or if I want to take my cartridge over to my friend's house and play it over there, it'll bring my game with me, you know? You know, people can plug in, you know, USB multi-taps and add more players just really easily to games for bigger multiplayer games. It's just going to be really cool.
I think the thing everyone really wants to know, of course, is will this bring Phil Fish back to gaming? No, I'm like a lead balloon. I'm sorry.
Who was Phil Fish?
he did.
Kevin
did,
could have at least given me like a complimentary grunt of approval or something.
I'm feeling stupid right now.
He did Fez, which was
and then famously quit the whole industry because of a doxing incident. Anyway, infamously, maybe more infamous. I think on that note.
No. I have one question that I've been dying to know because I am a collector of games and I like to have everything organized on my little game shelves. What is? I mean, I know that it's on a Atari Jaguar cartridge, but beyond that, what's the packaging gonna look like?
Yeah, I knew this was gonna come up.
Sorry.
The end label debate.
Yes.
Well, we're going to put them in plastic clamshells without a doubt.
Okay. That's actually what I care most about. So like a Genesis era before they switch to the, or more like Neo Geo Snaplock type thing.
I would say more like a Genesis case.
Okay.
Yeah. We're looking at three different suppliers of those right now.
Okay.
I mean, they're not real expensive. It makes total sense. I don't, you know, again, I love the Genesis case and it's like generally when I find, it's weird, like with Sega Master System games, I probably 75% of the time I always find them in their cases.
Yeah.
Genesis, not as much. I don't know why. It's a little weird. You'd think they'd be kind of the same, but for whatever reason, Sega Master System, people just saved their boxes. But, you know, like NES box games, like at the swap meet and stuff, I never see them ever, you know, Genesis. Yeah, you'll still see Genesis box games. You'll see Master System box games. You know, if there's a plastic case that's nice, that's got really cool artwork on it and a really nice instruction manual, you know, clipped inside of it, I think generally people will keep them. So certainly collectors these days will keep them, gamers. You know. So, yeah, it's very important. And being that you can't really pull these cartridges out, I mean, even if we took that handle off, there's a concave shape to a Genesis to these either way. They don't stack well no matter what.
Yeah.
So I know somebody did make an end label that they were selling on Atari Age that we've kind of looked into. But you know, I don't know how permanent they would be because there is a seam up there that it has to go over, you know.
I don't know. Optional end labels, I don't know. I'm just thinking back on some Famicom carts where some had them on and some didn't. Yeah. I think uniform is better than.
Yeah. But no, definitely plastic clamshell cases for sure.
Personally, I like the handles. I don't mind them.
I love them. Yeah, I think they're really effective.
But then again, I liked the Atari Jaguar, so I don't know how valid my opinion is.
Yeah. I tell you, it's still an attractive looking design, and that's why Steve couldn't bring himself to destroy those tools. He just appreciates, you know, something that looks nice, and I think part of him thought that some crazy person like me would probably come around sooner or later and buy them. But, you know, from the time he put them on eBay and when they didn't sell to when I bought them, it was probably 3 or 4 years later. And he never destroyed them. So for whatever reason, they're still around. And, you know, hopefully this is the reason.
If I can ask you just really briefly about the controller, is the production of that being outsourced or are you guys producing that as well?
No, it's being out. Well, we're 95% sure it's being outsourced to Interworks. They did the Pro Wii U controller. We've got a lot of kind of crap for that. But, you know, most of the problems, first of all, it's a beautiful design. When I pictured a controller for this in my mind before I even knew about their controller, I pictured that controller, you know, dual analog six. Well, that's not very retro. Well, most of the developers that we've talked to, even the old school guys, Steve Weida, even clear back to guys like him, they want that option. And hey, those would have been great to have back in the day. So, you know, that was certainly an improvement, and a lot of dual stick shooters really, you know, work well with those. So it was important for us to kind of have kind of a modern day functionality kind of combined, married with an old school D-pad. And their controller really was exactly that. And I actually discovered it in Retro Magazine. I think it was our second issue in the swag bag section. We talked about that controller, and I'm the publisher, and but I don't remember that going into that. I don't remember seeing it. And I was going through one of our old back issues, and I just saw that, and I thought, holy crap, that's exactly what I envisioned this thing to be. And they're local, so it just made sense to go talk with them. And they'd love to do it. And most of the complaints that they had about that particular controller was the connectivity. It was wireless.
Yeah.
There was connectivity issues and stuff. And so, being that it's going to be USB, I don't think we're going to have to worry about those types of things. And it feels like a really, we're supposed to be getting a prototype USB controller from them any day now. And we will beat the living shit out of that thing. Steve will throw that. He'll stomp on it. He'll drop it. We'll play it like crazy. Then he's, we're going to just try to destroy that thing. And, it's got to work. And so we're kind of coming down to the wire on this piece of it. But, they're assuring us that this thing, will certainly do what we need it to do. It's going to be a great controller with the USB. And so, again, we hope that that's the case, because I really do like the controller. It feels solid. I mean, I've got one. I have one sitting right here. It's over on the shelf over there. But, I mean, it's a really nice feeling controller. And, it's going to give, again, developers lots of different options to tie into. And, hey, if you don't like it, you can plug in a USB, your favorite USB controller. It's not a big deal.
That's nice. I saw that controller. It kind of looks like, it's like a Wii U Pro controller kind of ate a Super Famicom controller, which I think is very, very, very cool.
Yeah.
And as for the whole dual analog debate, I don't know. If we got a game like Smash TV on this, I think that would end the debate right there. Yeah.
Yeah, right there. Yeah. Yeah, well, you'd love to have a game like that.
Yeah.
We're talking, hopefully to Matt Thornton on Towerfall and some of these Duck Game, I'm trying to bring onto this thing. I mean, there's so many cool games that will use that we just couldn't leave them off. And like I said, developers want that. They want that on. They want that. I mean, that was really one of the biggest requests that we've got when we were originally talked with them months and months ago, a large group of developers. I mean, pretty much, every single one of them. We must have dual shot or dual analog on this thing. Yeah. So.
All right. I think that's the majority of my questions. Sean, you got something brewing?
Home brewing? No. I think we hit pretty much everything. I'm super excited for this. I will be, depending on what the cost, I'll be hopefully pledging when it comes out. And I would encourage everyone else to do it too, because the potential here is unlimited. I know it doesn't really help on the business side of things, but I foresee great things if this comes to fruition.
Well, there's a lot of heart into this product. We're game collectors. I mean, I've been gaming my whole life. I started my first website, Game Gavel, back in 2008, which we're still kind of trying to keep. It's been kind of, I've never had the money to really go out and promote that, but it's still the only dedicated gaming auction site in the world. No listing fees. And, there's new people trying it every day. Stuff's, generally bought and sold on it every day. And now that the magazine has kind of taken off, that's the only other component of this, guys, is Retro Magazine, which we haven't really talked about. I mean, we're up to, we're printing 40,000 of these things now. So they're all getting circulated. We're in Barnes & Noble and Hastings, stores across the USA now. So we're getting some good penetration there. And, we're going to use the magazine to go hand in hand with the console. So everybody that gets a console will get at least a digital subscription to the magazine, maybe a print eventually.
And you can have maps and
all of that stuff.
Tips and tricks for the
it's gonna be like Nintendo Power.
Yeah,
I mean, totally. So I mean, we've kind of got this embedded free to some extent media function that we control, that we can advertise our games in. We're not going to review our own games, but we can certainly promote them, preview them, have interviews with the developers, concept art, all sorts of really fun, cool stuff. And we could do tips and tricks, for these games when they come out, and level maps. And I mean, it's going to be just like old school, right? I mean, you're going to get the magazine coming to your house, every month or every other month, and you got the games there, and you'll learn about the games from the magazine, and it's just going to go hand in hand. So that's one of the advantages that we have. I mean, we do have some existing infrastructure to promote this. And this thing's going to go viral. I mean, this thing, Indiegogo is courting us. They want us, they're basically, they want us bad. Yeah. So I'm talking with them, this week. So, maybe we won't be on Kickstarter. I don't know. We may be on Indiegogo. I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, this is this product, really, regardless of where we sell it, it's going to go viral. People are going to hear about it. It should be, I think, on every gaming website probably in the world. I mean, there's just too many newsworthy things about this thing. The fact that it's the Jaguar, the fact that it's the first cartridge-based system for new games, the fact that we got some relatively big-name developers, you know, jumping on this thing at the beginning. This thing, when it launches, when it delivers, you know, next year, we could have 50 to 100 launch titles for this thing. Now, we don't want to flood it with shovelware, but, I mean, again, we're getting so many contacts and looking at so many great games that we can pick and choose, you know, what we think are games that people are really going to want, that we want to play on there ourselves, and bring those out. I mean, so our trick is, you know, we need to launch the Kickstarter with 10 to 20 games somewhere in there that are guaranteed to ship with the product when it ships next year to the backers first and foremost. And then, you know, backers and you know, we'll continue to take pre-orders the day the Kickstarter goes down, whether it's Funstock in the UK or us directly through our own shopping cart site here in the US. You know, we'll continue to take pre-orders for these things, and we'll continue to announce games that will be launch titles. I mean, so we've kind of got this first batch of Kickstarter launch titles, and then we've got this new batch that we don't know yet that will be announced. There will be more games coming on. We're not going to just, you know, at the end of 45 days, quit trying to bring games onto this thing. You know, we're talking to, you know, we're talking to some pretty interesting people about coming on board. People that are in developer relations roles with a few other companies that really just love what we're doing and want to be a part of it, that already have contacts with, I mean, developers all over the place. And so, you know, I think, you know, even when this Kickstarter ends, I think we're still just getting going as far as going after and bringing some of these bigger titles on. And again, if we can show that there's a demand here in the short, you know, 45-day campaign period, because we're going to do a 45-day, not a 30, I think we can go out into these bigger developers who we know lots of them, and we have people that know them, and we have shared contacts. And so, I mean, we can go to these companies and say, look, we just sold 30,000 of these in 45 days. People want this. And let's start talking sequels to some of your games. Because a lot of these sequels, they haven't monetized in years.
Yeah.
And there's so many. I mean, I just posted a thing on our website, like Data East's games. You know, they've been bought and sold now. Their IP's been bought and sold like 2 times.
I was just going to mention Data East, because please contact them. If this thing has Burger Time or something like it, I would be in heaven.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Did you like the remake that they brought out? The cylindrical one that they brought out like on the Wii U and whatnot. Did you like that version?
I've liked all, but I don't know. I think the original will always be my favorite.
Some sort of a 2D experience. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, they could definitely upgrade the graphics, but I don't know. Just that classic.
Yeah.
Gameplay style, and of course, you know, I mean, Bad Dudes, things like that. You know, just the Data East classics. You know.
Oh, they got like 200 games to pick from. I mean, Joe and Mac,
and you need this thing needs a puzzle game, something like Magic Drop or something like that.
Yeah. But I mean, there's all of these games, all this dead IP out there that there's still fans for this stuff. There just hasn't been a system made for that. You know, and this is really an excuse for them to tap into some of this old IP and bring it out. First of all, small dev teams, quick development. You know, you can get this thing to market really fast compared to most of the games these days. So it's not going to be a huge investment in time or, you know, manpower or whatever. And we can go back and start mining this old IP where we know that there's still huge fans for. I mean, when I post the question on Facebook, like, what game from Data East do you want to see brought back? Or what game from Capcom do you want to see brought back? It lights up. We get like 100 and some responses within a day.
Yeah.
People go nuts. They're so passionate about this stuff. And again, there's just not been, you know, a platform to really do this. I mean, you know, there was a new Contra that came out a couple of years ago on the touchscreen on the iPhone. Yeah. It was horrible. People don't want that.
Yeah.
You know, I think finally these companies are seeing, you know, if you did bring out like a new 16-bit Bad Dudes, but that was just amped up, you know, Neo Geo style or something, people would go crazy for it. More things to interact with, but still 2D, 16-bit looking sprites, but just bigger and more interactive environments. You know, I mean, people go nuts. And that would sell, it would sell systems like crazy, you know, if we had exclusives like that. I mean, you look at Xbox, you know, bringing out Rare Arcade, you know, bringing back a bunch of this old, you know, everybody's tapping into this nostalgia right now. They all want a piece of it. It's like I said, when I finally was at E3 last, not this year, but last year, and saw all of the space, expensive E3 floor space that Microsoft gave up and Sony gave up to bring in, you know, one and two man indie development teams to show off their game. I thought, shit, this is the time for this. Because we had this, Steve Weed and I had this idea probably 3 years ago. Before the magazine, you know, we were talking about bringing out a plug and play with SD card game slot on it, and you play new games on SD cards, you know, stuff like that. And it just sort of wasn't the right time. And then, you know, this whole Jaguar thing kind of fell into place. And then E3 comes and all these, you know, Axiom Verge and Nidhogg. And I mean, there's this game after game, Chariot. I mean, all these awesome retro style games that are coming out. It's just like, this is the time. You know, there's enough games to support this right now. And that's really when we decided to do it. So I think it's, again, time's right for this. And why not try it? But we need people's support 100%. It's going to be a huge team effort. If we want the possibility of bringing back some of these games, we got to show that there's a market for not only the games, but a system to play them on. And I think this is our shot to do it.
That's a pretty good sales pitch. I guess one of the things is, I mean, as yourself are a collector of the original retro gaming systems, that you know will be that this system will be styled off of. Do you think there's a bit of a conflict right there that a lot of these homebrew communities are like making things for, say, the Genesis, mm-hmm. but you know, if they can port it, you know, to the Genesis and also the retro VGS, does it? I'm not sure what I'm trying to say here. Sorry.
It, like, infringe on
yeah,
that side,
yeah,
of
exactly,
things?
Exactly.
I don't think so. I mean, we're not telling them they can't. You know, we don't need exclusives like that. What we want is, you know, bring their game to a bigger market, give them a bigger reason to continue to make games. So, you know, somebody makes a game for Genesis, they put it on a Genesis cartridge. That's great. And they sell a few hundred of them, but maybe we can help them sell 10, 20, 30,000 of them. You know, that's what it's all about. And giving these people this opportunity to, you know, if they want to do this full time, maybe there's a market to do it. You know, you're probably not going to do it. I mean, there's been a few companies, Watermelon. I mean, there's been a few that can break out of that, you know, NG Dev Teams one. I mean, there's not that many. I mean, you can count them probably on one or two hands. That are like making this a full-time gig. Most of them aren't, you know, they're just part-time. They're doing it for the love and everything else. So, hey, yeah, let's bring it out on the Genesis. There's definitely going to be people that want to play that game on their Genesis hardware. But I mean, think of all of the people that don't even know that you can buy new games for the Genesis. I mean, that's the market we want to take it to. I'm not doing this to sell 5,000 of these to people that already have 20 systems. You know, we hope that that's a, you know, we hope they, I mean, those are the people that are going to kickstart us. So those are the people that are going to get us going, get this fire lit. But, you know, if we can, you know, again, expand out and, you know, have a big enough Kickstarter where, you know, I mean, some of these Kickstarters, they get so big. I mean, they make the national news and all of a sudden it's like, wow, there's this fourth system coming out here. It's going to play cartridges. God, I remember I used to play cartridges all the time. I loved it. And, you know, and I'd love to get a system like this for my kids. Or who knows how this thing could. The fire could get lit and this thing expands. But the whole thing is about making a market here that people can thrive off of, making games for it. Port them to us, port it to the, you know, put it on the Genesis, combine it with our core. Doesn't cost them any extra to do it. You know, they're going to get a nice royalty check from us on every one that we sell. Why not?
Wow.
Sold.
Yeah, I mean, give it, you know, give them a bigger market to make these games and sell them. I mean, it's great that they're selling these games, but I mean, I've talked to some of them. I mean, their goal when they make a new game is to sell, you know, a couple hundred of them many times. And you know, that's great, you know, that they're passionate enough to do it, probably not making any money on it, right? Just doing it for the love of it. But hey, if we can just take it and give them the opportunity to take that game to thousands of more people that would love that game. Because there's so many people that don't even know you can buy games. I mean, I talk to friends of mine. I'm like, hey, I just bought this new game for my Atari 2600. What? They still make games for the Atari 2600? you know, or you buy a new NES game and you tell your friends, what? There's new NES games still getting made? Tell me about this. You know, they don't even know. I mean, that's a very low level niche hobby level, you know, all of us. Yeah. And there's a huge market above and beyond that we're seeing, people that want to play, you know, the Shovel Knights and stuff like that. I mean, it's transcending all of, you know, this kind of low level hobbyist market that's been out there right now. So again, we just need to get a system out there that's for the masses, because people still enjoy playing these games. Yeah. And I think maybe because it's a new system to play these retro style games that are real popular these days, that you can play on these, you know, huge consoles now, but we can play them on this on cartridges, and you don't have to go through all of the BS to get, you know, to get the game started and whatever. I mean, it's pretty cut and dried and simple like it was. And I think maybe it'll open up the eyes, and so you'll get a lot of, you know, hopefully the market expands. And it gives, again, these developers, these kind of lower-level homebrew developers that are super high-quality, passionate people making these great games, just another market.
Wow, it's the opposite of freemium. Like,
yeah,
in every way, like the...
I don't know, but freemium games, yeah, I can't get into them. You get what you pay for, right? Yeah. I mean, you really do.
But, I mean... What you're proposing here is pretty much the exact opposite of the way the market's been going these last few years, and I wish you all the luck, because that's the way I wish it would go myself. So,
yeah, it's not just us. I mean, I've talked to young gamers, and I mean, I'll be at Target and I'll just talk to, you know, some teenagers that are up looking at games and stuff, and you know, the game companies aren't fooling anybody. I mean, these kids are smart these days, you know. They have no choice, though. I mean, you get what you get. You know, there really isn't much choice these days. So, you know, here's a choice. You know, if you love these style games and you still think they're fun, then here's another choice for you. And this is that fourth system that, again, if we can play some of the games that the other systems are playing, I think it'll, you know, to some extent, we will be competing with them, which is really scary to me. But I don't really care. You know, I mean, it is what it is. Again, we don't really want to compete with them, but we will, because of just the nature of the fact that we are a new console to play new games. There will be some games crossing over with them without a doubt. And I guess we'll just have to see what happens. But, you know, gamers, speak up. Tell people you want this. I mean, I want to sell a bunch of them, but I mean, I want to own this system myself. I really want to see this happen. This is the system I want to buy. I want to own this system. You know, Steve Weed, like I said, he wants to make games for this system like he did back in the Genesis days.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking to David Siller. Do you guys know who David Siller is? Does that name ring a bell?
Sorry.
He he worked for Sunsoft.
Okay.
You know, back in the 90s. He did Arrow the Acrobat.
Zero,
the Kamikaze Squirrel. He also did Maximo on the PS2.
Oh, okay.
Sure, Maximo. Yeah. Yep, oh, that one.
Yeah, yeah. David was Sushi X. He was the guy who coined Sushi X in the early EGM days.
Okay, now I know who you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so he goes way back in editorial, you know, the history of gaming editorial and development. He got out, you know, when he left EGM, he got into development. And so we're talking with David, and he's a brilliant game designer. And so, you know, and he does own the IP for Arrow the Acrobat and Zero the Kamikaze Squirrel right now. But we are talking with him about designing, getting a team together of ex great game designers, you know, who have made games that we've all grown up playing, that have a track record, to make a new platforming mascot for us.
Huh.
So we're talking with him this week again. He's very intrigued by this, and I'd like to maybe bring him on. You know, he's very well connected to Japanese game developers. You know, the some of the gods that made, you know, some of the great games back in the day over there, you know, because we really want some Japanese support of this thing, because I mean, we really need, you know, some of those games coming back on this thing, or, you know, JRPGs and stuff like that. So we're talking to him, and so it's interesting. I've talked to Simon Jeffrey. I don't know if you guys know us. Well, I'm not going to get to that right now.
Okay, that's fine.
I won't get to that right now. But we've had some, you know, again, we've had some pretty iconic gaming icons really interested in this. I'm trying to talk to John and Brenda Romero, for God's sake, you know. they Steve's good friends with John and Brenda, and he did some DOS games back in the day that are kind of hard to find these days. And I was trying to see if they'd come back and do a Romero collection on this thing with some of the games that were sort of hard to find, some of their earlier games, kind of all on one cartridge. So I think sooner or later I'll knock them down. I've talked to them both, and they love the whole idea. They're really busy with a couple current projects right now. But we know a lot of people, that are iconic game developers and stuff that would love to come back. I'm talking to Dan Gorlin, who did Choplifter.
Wow.
About coming back and making new games for this. Steve Cartwright, David and Crane and Gary Kitchen are both friends of mine.
I was just going to name David Crane. Okay, yes.
Yeah, yeah. How cool would it be to get like a new Pitfall? I mean, we couldn't call it that unless we wanted to try to do something with Activision, which we do have an in over there. But I'd love to get something that, what would have come after Pitfall 2?
Oh, yeah. Or get Gary Kitchen's Game Maker on that thing. Let you make your own stuff right on the.
Oh, we're already going down that path right now. Not with Gary, although I've thought about asking Gary, but we're talking to Mike Micah at Other Ocean, and maybe they're Digital Eclipse now. I'm really confused what's going on over there. But Mike did iDarb just recently. Mike developed Dragon's Lair for the Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
Anybody that can do that and do as good a job on that. So, no, Mike's a great asset. Met with them, and we're talking about he's interested in making a Game Maker cartridge for this, and he'd be a great guy to do it. But Other Oceans, they've done third-party dev work with Capcom, Konami, Namco, Sega, everybody. Everybody knows Mike Micah. And he's got really great relationships with all the big publishers and developers. So, like I said, he's done tons and tons of third-party development work for all of them over the course of probably over 20 years. So great relationships. So he is somebody that we're working with kind of on a biz dev, development dev type level with some of those bigger companies. So we've just got lots of great contacts that we can exploit. If we can show that there's a market here, we've got lots of things that we can take that information with and do. We've got lots of things we can do with that information and get lots of support for this at a high level. So, again, we just really need to show that there's, some demand for a product like this.
All right. That's excellent. There's a lot of really famous names who might possibly be associated with this. I don't know. I'm pretty excited about this myself. So, is there anything? We've got maybe just a minute left. If you just want to have a final message.
Like I said, we just need everyone's support. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/retrovgs or go to our website, retrovgs.com. We'd love to also have you check out our magazine. ShopReadRetro.com is the magazine's website. You can get digital back issues there. We do have some print back issues available. And you can go to readretro.com. That's just kind of our retro media website. We got lots of great daily information going up there that gamers, retro lovers should check it out every day. There's always some new stuff going up. We got a lot of great writers over there. And Kevin Tamburino is one of our writers. So, hey.
Yes, that is true.
yeah. Getting some good information, some really interesting stuff coming from Japan. So you can check us out on all fronts.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. And we're hoping once this thing comes out, maybe we'll get you back on here and do a little retrospective on the retro system.
It'll be interesting, in a year from now to see what transpired. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's incredibly exciting. So you think this is a 2016 launch then?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, if we can get the Kickstarter up here in the next couple, in the next month, we're still shooting for August sometime. We're probably looking at somewhere around a year to deliver.
Wow.
Yeah. So middle of next year, maybe there'll be a new console under the Christmas tree.
Awesome.
We can all rip open and plug in and play immediately.
I'll get in my pajamas and make a video of myself opening it. So
I really want to do that. Seriously, I'd love to see that. Not just you, but everybody. Let's get some viral videos going of the unboxings for this are going to be great. Whether it's Christmas, hopefully it's before Christmas though.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, like I said, thanks for having me on. Love to come back on and hopefully talk about a successful launch.
Yes. This is great. So Sean, I know before we started talking today, you were not totally 100% sold on this, right?
Oh yeah, like the more I looked into it, I was like, oh, this. I mean, especially the FPGA chip was that sold me. I'm in.
Like I was, you had me at cartridge.
All right.
Excellent.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. All right. Sean, you want to take this one out?
Sure. Well, I guess it's all the time we have for the Famicom Dojo podcast this week. And so until next time, the dojo is
available in a variety of colors and styles.
Yes, perfect.
Famicom Dojo.
The Famicom Dojo video game podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our music, Famicom Thrash and RPG, is performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at lewistrations.co.uk. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter at Famicom Dojo, our free iTunes storefront, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded. Visit our show notes, including links, video, and audio bonuses at famicomdojo.tv/podcast. Please consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. And sponsor an episode or listen to any of the other great shows on the Little Podcast Network at littlepodcast.com.